written by Anthony Trollope and dramatised by Martin Wade. This little-known novel from the canon of Trollope's writing brings to life the most extraordinary and powerfully drawn of his women. I am, declared Trollope, very much afraid of Arabella Trefoil.
The senator who gives this tale its title has but a minor part to play in it. And once the tale is told, you may well protest that it should have been called something else entirely. But I like the title, and I'm keeping it. Though the senator lacks a leading role, he's of some significance in the story, not least as an observer of English ways. It is as such, indeed, that he's come to England. He wishes to learn about the state of our nation.
The plan, Mr. Gotobed, is to spend 2 weeks in town.
2 weeks? Fine.
And then we'll go down to Bragton Park.
Which is?
Near Dillsborough.
Bragton's your home now, is it?
Yes. It's been the family seat for centuries. But I've hardly set foot in the place since I inherited it. Work in the Foreign Office has rather kept me away.
We have arrived in London in the autumn of 1874. We are in a cab on our way to the Langham Hotel. The American is Mr. Elias Gotobed. The Englishman is Mr. John Morton, until very recently, Secretary of the Legation in Washington, and now on 4 months' leave of absence. Mr. Morton is a solid, virtuous man, known to his Foreign Office colleagues as the Paragon.
Excuse me, What is that object?
Sorry?
The large red cylinder on the corner. I've noticed one or two before.
That's a pillar box. A receptacle for letters that require posting.
Right, a pillar box. Well, splendid. So, tell me, Mr. Morton, Who shall I meet when we go to Bragton? Is there a large tribe of Morton relations to be found there?
No, afraid not. The house is empty at present. I have a cousin, Reginald, somewhat older than myself, but he lives in the other, smaller family home.
I'll see him, shall I?
I would hope so. Can't be sure. Haven't seen him myself for more than 20 years.
Good Lord. Have you quarreled?
No, not really. There was a quarrel, a lawsuit, indeed, which was undertaken on my behalf by my grandmother, both my parents being dead.
The lawsuit was over property, I guess.
Yes. The smaller house, Hoppet Hall in particular. And the decision went in favor of my cousin, which is of no difficulty for me, I have to say, but which my grandmother has found very hard to endure.
Your cousin, she thinks, isn't entitled.
Correct.
He was born out of wedlock.
Well, yes, so she claims, without any evidence as far as I can tell. But she still bears bitter resentment. She's a formidable lady. You'll see her at Bragton. I've invited her to stay while the Trefoils are there.
Right. So when Miss Trefoil arrives, your grandmother will be casting her eye over her.
She certainly will. But I don't expect that she'll bestow her approval. She never approves of anything.
Shortly before he left Washington, John Morton, the Paragon, had surprised himself somewhat, and surprised others rather more, by becoming engaged to Arabella Trefoil. Arabella was the niece of a duke, it's true, but those who knew her knew that she'd had many lovers and had been engaged to several. Those who knew her concluded that the Paragon had not chosen wisely in choosing Miss Trefoil.
So, my dear, are you glad to be back in England?
I'm glad to be back on dry land.
And are you glad, I wonder, about your choice of husband?
You spotted him, Mama.
True.
He was the last man in the world that I'd have considered myself. He's quiet, pleasant, dull. But he has a sort of status, I suppose. Diplomats do have status, do they not? And he harbours no special vices, as far as I can tell.
No, my dear. There's a degree of doubt, though, about the money.
I believe he has some, Mama.
If he had none, Arabella, I wouldn't have suggested him. But you see, since we've returned, I've made further inquiries, and I find that Mr. John Morton is beginning to disappoint me. It seems that such money as he has, he intends to be careful about. Settlements, the allowance, life insurance, residence in town, he refuses to be drawn on such matters. I'm not at all sure that it will do.
It must be pointed out in the daughter's favour that she was not addicted to pleasures, or even to money, except that it could buy diamonds. What she wanted most of all was to be a great lady, one who would be invited everywhere, even by those who hated her. Women's hatred, by the way, she rather enjoyed. And for a man to fall in love with her counted as nothing unless the man could confer the greatness she desired. Whether John Morton was such a man remained to be seen.
The Trefoils come on Monday, Grandmother.
So soon? I've only just accustomed myself to the Senator, if one can do such a thing.
You don't much like him?
Well, a member of Congress can't be an English gentleman. And he does ask so many questions.
He does. I must find him a few people to interrogate while he's here. I feel I might tire of his company.
He'll be able to talk to the Trefoils.
True. Though he got to know them well enough in Washington. I could invite my cousin over.
Your cousin? No.
Why not? I can't turn my back on him for the rest of my life.
Perhaps you can't. But I will. Hoppet Hall is rightfully yours.
Grandmother.
It belongs to the legitimate side of the Morton family.
Grandmother.
And therefore Reginald Morton is a usurper. And if he ever visits here, I won't speak to him or eat at the same table.
John Morton saw no point in resisting Mrs. Morton's intransigence. And for the time being, the task of keeping the Senator company was entirely Mr. Morton's own.
Good Lord! I've never seen so many dogs.
Hounds, they're generally called.
Are you a hunter, Mr. Morton?
No, I'm not a hunter.
I am, or was. I had to kill to eat, and I didn't have a pack of dogs to help me. So, how's it arranged? Do the fellows bring a fox with them to make sure of a good chase?
No.
What if they don't find a fox? They go home happy, do they?
Far from it.
All that time. All that expense for nothing in return. It's a strange business.
There's Lord Rufford.
Huh?
Over there, look, by the wall.
Oh, a lord.
Huh? Met him a few times in London. Come, I'll introduce you.
The introduction was effected. But then the master of hounds exchanged whispered words with Lord Rufford, and a man with a gun appeared. And there was something of a commotion, which only died down when the hunt moved on.
Mr. Morton, what was all the fuss?
A fox has been poisoned. And they think it was that fellow over there with the gun.
Why would he have poisoned it?
To save his birds, I suppose.
Oh, sounds reasonable to me. What was he shouting about?
He was issuing a threat. He'll shoot any hounds, he says, that come onto his land.
I can understand that, too.
Perhaps you can, Mr. Go-to-Bed. But you'd better not say so too loudly. Shooting at hounds and poisoning foxes isn't judged to be acceptable practice.
Spoils the fun, huh, for all those nicely dressed jockeys?
Well,
I tell you, Mr. Morton, sir, I respect that man with the gun. He was defending his rights, that's all.
There they are, Grandmother.
Yes.
Lady Augustus. Arabella, it's good to see you both. How are you?
Very tired.
Oh, dear.
Very tired and very put out. The carriage had a most disagreeable smell.
Tuesday afternoon at Dillsborough Station. No observer of this little scene would have been in any danger of imagining that Arabella Trefoil and John Morton were lovers, anticipating a shared life of bliss. She managed a smile for him, but it was one such as certain women offer to anybody who addresses them. And as for Lady Augustus, her gaze was already turned away from the welcoming party, as if she'd decided to take offence.
Lady Augustus, Arabella, may I...
Where are the porters?
May I introduce Mrs. Morton, my grandmother?
Where are they, for goodness sake? I never saw such rudeness in my entire life. And all that fuss about the carriage is intolerable.
They were a little fatigued by the journey, I think.
Fatigued? In my view, no lady, no true lady, should ever be too fatigued to conduct herself with politeness.
Will you join them before dinner?
Well, yes, John, of course I shall. I at least have not abandoned propriety. But you mustn't expect me to make them feel at home in this place. I should never want them to feel that.
Poor John Morton. His austere grandmother and the annoying American had already put him out of sorts. Now he found that the new visitors were not at all as they'd been in Washington. Arabella was so cold towards him, Lady Augustus so disagreeable. How was he to manage? More to the point, how would he manage with cold Arabella when she was his wife? It was the mother's fault, he tried to tell himself. All would be well once the appalling Lady Augustus was out of the way.
This house is like a barracks. He might have put a few things in it to make it look half decent.
I don't suppose that he thinks there's much point. He lives abroad so much of the time.
Arabella, he'll have to be home for at least part of the year. And so will his wife. And the wife's relations. It was an act of sheer impudence to invite us here without furnishing the place.
He did say something about its condition, Mama.
Nonsense! If he told me the truth, I'd have stayed away. His purpose, it's clear, is to part with as little as possible, either now or when he marries. 1,200 a year is all he's offering, and it won't do.
It must do, I suppose. You and I shall get by.
Get by? You are not marrying John Morton or anybody to get by. And I don't remember him warning us about the grandmother either. Hideous old termagant. If she's to become a fixture in the house, then there's no hope for you.
Mama, please.
It won't do, and it's my duty to tell you so. You may be very much in love with Mr. Morton.
I'm not, and you know it. Mama, this kind of talk was all very well 10 years ago.
10 years ago? Arabella, you were almost in your cradle 10 years ago.
No, Mama. I was a single woman. And in the years since then, I've worked extremely hard to alter that condition and to achieve as favourable a result as possible. I've worked harder, it seems to me, than most men work to earn their pay. And I'm becoming tired of it all. Tired of all the effort involved. I don't care for Mr. Morton any more than I'll ever care for anybody. But for the time being, I'm prepared to marry him.
For the time being? You mean you're prepared to have second thoughts?
Perhaps. But I don't want him breaking off the engagement till I've finally made up my mind. If I like, I can always put an end to it myself. After all, nobody knows about it yet. Nobody in London, at least.
Mr. Morton, good afternoon.
And to you, Miss Masters.
What a pleasant surprise. How are you?
I'm very well. Doing nothing suits me. Indeed, if you knew my lazy routine, you'd have thought it no surprise, pleasant or otherwise, to find me here.
This, Mr. Morton, is Reginald, the cousin of John. He's tall, he's handsome, and he has chosen to live alone, for which reason he's regarded by many of the Dillsborough denizens as being gloomy and misanthropic. As for the young lady, Mary Masters, she's the daughter of a local attorney and has known Reginald Morton ever since she was a young girl.
You've walked from Dillsborough, have you?
It's not far. I come this way occasionally. I like to look at Bragton. For old time's sake.
Yes, likewise. You know the place is lived in now.
Really? By your cousin, you mean?
The same. He's returned from the States and is making Bragton his home. Temporarily, at least.
You've spoken with him, then?
No. Got the news from the housekeeper.
Mary Masters, though a mere attorney's daughter, had lived much of her life at Bragton Park. Reginald's aunt, Lady Ushant, had been permitted to stay there, and being widowed and childless, had taken it upon herself to act as guardian for Mary, whose mother had died. Thus it was that Mary was looked after and educated at Bragton, spent 12 or more years there, until Lady Ushant was obliged to leave. They were happy years, during which Mary became very dear to Lady Ushant, and a friend of Reginald too.
Mary, why don't we revive old memories? Take a look at the place.
We won't go too near to the house, I think.
No. But a stroll through the grounds won't do any harm.
Hmm.
How is your father?
He's well, thank you.
And your stepmother?
Yes, she's well too.
Now, we have a style to negotiate.
Mary was in the act of putting out her hand so that she could be helped over the stile when a young man appeared on the other side.
Mr. Twentyman.
No.
Lawrence.
Larry, please. Afternoon, Mary. Afternoon, Mr. Morton.
Good afternoon.
I was just about to walk around the Bragton grounds.
Yes.
With Mr. Morton.
Right. Well, perhaps I could come with you.
Miss Masters, I hadn't realised you were intending to meet Mr. Twentyman and walk back with him to Dillsborough.
No, I wasn't. Was I, Mr. Twentyman?
Mr. Twentyman smiled at Mary from the other side of the stile and said nothing.
In truth, I didn't expect to meet either of you. Oh, dear. What a shame I can't go in both directions simultaneously.
Mary thought, in truth, that she would very much have liked to continue the walk with Mr. Morton. She would have liked to see her old friend much more frequently than she had since she left the care of Lady Ushant and returned to her family. And Lawrence Twentyman, it must be said, was not so dear to her as she was to him. Nevertheless, she saw that Mr. Morton was firmly set against Mr. Twentyman joining the tour of the grounds, and therefore she walked back towards Dillsborough with Lawrence Twentyman by her side.
He was cross.
Was he?
I rather think so. Are you cross too?
No, Lawrence. I'm not cross.
It would appear that I've done the wrong thing, but I can't for the life of me see how.
Lawrence Twentyman was a farmer, and he was very much in love with Mary. He was, by temperament, a jealous man, but he was not at all jealous of Reginald Morton. It had never occurred to him, indeed, to link Mary and Mr. Morton. Mary was merely the daughter of an attorney, while Lawrence's somewhat mystified view of Reginald placed the latter as a man of status and scholarship. Not only that, but heavens, the fellow was 40 years old. At Bragton the following morning, John Morton and Arabella took a stroll in the garden.
Well, my dear, are you feeling a little better after a night's rest?
Yes, thank you. Yes, I am.
Arabella turned her face towards John Morton and smiled her sweetest smile. Though it was not, perhaps, what you or I would deem particularly sweet. She was making her peace as best she could in order to ensure, for the present at least, that the engagement was safe.
It was good of you to come and meet us at the station.
Not at all.
And I'm sorry that Mama and I were not quite as gracious as we might have been.
My dear Arabella, you need say no more.
He gazed at her. She was, he decided, very beautiful. And he ought to be proud of her. And he ought to be happy. He'd been trying hard to persuade himself of his happiness. Was he in love with her? He was painfully anxious to know. But he couldn't be certain. And he rather doubted if she was in love with him.
So, my dear, what would you care to do in the next few days? Would you like to ride?
Yes, perhaps.
Would you like to visit a few places in the neighbourhood?
Yes, perhaps.
There's Norrington, Rufford.
Ah, Rufford, yes. His lordship's place, I assume, is quite near there.
Quite near? Do you know Lord Rufford?
We encountered each other in town just a week ago.
Oh, he's at Rufford Hall at present.
Yes, he told me he would be.
They were silent for a while. And then Arabella, claiming she was cold, retreated indoors, leaving John Morton alone with his thoughts.
Mr. Morton.
Though not for long.
Mr. Gotobed.
A word, if I may. How about that business with the poisoned fox and the unfortunate man they accused, Mr. Gourley? I hear now that Lord Rufford is the owner of the wood that's next to Mr. Gourley's land.
That's right.
And Lord Rufford breeds his foxes there. And Mr. Gourley, previous to the poisoning, had said that two of his cornfields had been damaged and 29 of Mrs. Gourley's geese had been killed.
I heard that the wife possessed just the one goose and that it could fend for itself.
Well, the truth will out. Mr. Gourley, I should tell you, is taking Lord Rufford to court to get proper compensation.
Is he indeed?
Mm-hmm. Now, I like this Mr. Gourley. He's not afraid to stand up against aristocratic despotism.
Mr. Goat.
And I shall offer him support and encouragement.
I'm not sure.
I am.
You may well find that local feeling
yes,
is...
Yes, yes. According to local feeling, no doubt, Mr. Gourley is a coarse and vulgar fella. All the more so because he won't lie down to be trodden on by the nobility. Well, but I say, good luck to the man, and let justice prevail.
John Morton was inclined to think that a guest in his house should avoid being involved in any controversy. But he couldn't bring himself to say so, and the senator strode off, first to pay a visit to Mr. and Mrs. Gourley, and then to the office of Mr. Bearside, an attorney whose name had been mentioned by Gourley. Bearside, I may say without excessive prejudice, was not generally considered to be as reputable or reliable an attorney as the father of Mary Masters.
Mr. Gourley is a poor man.
Undoubtedly.
A rather ignorant man, too, and not altogether as good a member of society as he ought to be.
That may be so, but his case is a strong one nonetheless.
It is, in theory at least. The situation, I believe, is that Lord Rufford has regularly paid a certain amount to Mr. Gourley in recompense for crop damage that the hunt regularly caused.
But the amount was fixed by Lord Rufford, and he didn't like to have it questioned.
Exactly.
That, Mr. Bearside, is the might of rank and money, hell-bent on having its own way.
Exactly.
That's feudalism, Mr. Bearside. Feudalism.
Feudalism, yes, exactly. Lord Rufford is a most determined and powerful man, while Mr. Gourley, as I may have hinted, is exceedingly poor and has no influence. I'd half promised the fellow I'd take up his case out of charity, you understand, since he is so very poor.
That was extremely good of you, sir.
But of course I can't afford to be out of pocket. Can't work without payments. And therefore, Mr. Gotobed, I don't quite see how I'm going to proceed.
Well, the case mustn't be dropped simply for lack of funds.
It would be a pity if it were. A great pity.
Oh, you're right. It would. Tell you what, I'll give you $50 if you see the business through.
A few days later, John Morton received a letter in which he, Mr. Gotobed, and the Trefoils were invited by Lord Rufford to stay at Rufford Hall. He himself had no wish to go. He had no wish, if he did go, to take Mr. Gotobed, whose involvement in the business between Gourley and Lord Rufford was threatening to be an embarrassment. But he decided it wouldn't be fair to deprive the investigative senator of a few days' residence at the home of a lord, and the Trefoils would have to be included too. Arabella, he was confident, would be somewhat peeved if she got to hear about the invitation after the event.
And there's to be a meet on Tuesday, you say?
Yes, and a dance in the evening.
You're intending to go, are you?
Well, I won't go if I'm going alone. I'm not one for hunting or dancing.
I have no mount, of course.
True, though... wait a moment. Yes, Rufford mentions that he has a horse which may be suitable. All this would interfere with your plan to visit the Pilkingtons.
Oh, I can easily put them off for a day or two, if I want.
And do you?
Well...
You wouldn't find it a bore?
Possibly. I'll see what Mama thinks.
Yes, do that.
We must go, Mama. We can't give up a chance such as this. The only reason Lord Rufford sent the invitation is because he knows we're here.
Well, yes, my dear, naturally. I don't suppose he wishes to become better acquainted with Mr. Morton.
He has £40,000 a year, Mama.
Yes. Now, other girls know that too, and they've been unsuccessful. But I don't mind if you try. I've always said John Morton wouldn't do.
You didn't always say that.
Well, I'm certain of it now, after nearly a week in this godforsaken place.
I won't be throwing myself at his lordship. I've no intention yet of spoiling my situation here. But a stay at Rufford Hall, it can't do any harm.
After his unfortunate encounter with Lawrence Twentyman, Reginald had promised himself that he'd keep away from Mary, and had vowed not to trouble his mind about a girl who could happily rush into Mr. Twentyman's arms. In truth, he wasn't sure if he should be troubled about any girl. Such conduct didn't seem to be part of the life he'd planned. But he'd received an inquiry which demanded an answer from Mary, and he found that this was reason enough to go straight to the house of Mr. Masters, Mary's father, and pay her a call.
My aunt has written. She wants you to stay with her at Cheltenham.
That's extremely kind of her.
For a month or so, she suggests.
A month?
From the first week in December and through the Christmas period. Would you like to?
Of course I would. Lady Ushant is my dearest, dearest friend. But I doubt if I can go.
Why not?
My stepmother, I fear, won't be able to spare me, particularly at Christmas.
That's unfortunate. Lady Ushant will be most disappointed.
And so shall I.
Still, you have delights enough in Dillsborough.
What do you mean?
It doesn't matter. Forgive me. I haven't offended you, I hope.
No, Mr. Morton. Or if I am offended, I think I ought not to be. The fact is, I'd go and see your aunt if it were possible. And though she's so extremely kind to me, I've no reason to expect other people to be the same.
Miss Masters, I'm very sorry about what happened the other day.
I'm sorry too. I could see that you were angry. And it may well have been wrong for Mr. Twentyman to offer to join us, but what could I do? You were too grand for Mr. Twentyman, and therefore you were too grand for me.
Well, that's an unkind way of putting it. I'm an old friend of yours, and we'd met, and I wanted to talk with you about Bragton and former times. There's nothing grand about that. Nor do I set myself above Mr. Twentyman.
I think you do.
No, it wouldn't be right. He earns his daily bread, which is more than I can boast.
Nonetheless, there is a distance, a difference between the two of you. We both know that. And therefore, you consider Mr. Twentyman to be an unsuitable companion for me. But I beg to differ.
He looked at her. He'd hoped she would be able to visit Lady Ushant. He'd intended to go with her, despite his earlier determination to avoid her company. But now it seemed that, in spite of the advantages of her upbringing, Mary had become persuaded that Lawrence Twentyman was her equal in rank, and she'd chosen him as the man she was to marry. Perhaps, he reasoned, it was better that she shouldn't visit Lady Ushant.
Well, anyhow, will you write to my aunt?
Of course I shall. And I'll ask Papa to let you know what's been agreed.
He thanked her brusquely and departed, and Mary, left alone, was vexed with herself.
I shouldn't have spoken of Lawrence like that. It was wrong. It was perverse.
Mary's friends, her stepmother, Mr. Twentyman himself, all were convinced that marriage to the young farmer was the appropriate, inevitable step for her. But Mary knew that the numerous benefits she'd received from Lady Ushant had made her quite unfit for such a match.
I almost wish I'd never known Lady Ushant, or spent all those years at Bragton. What use were they? They've served no purpose, save to set me at odds with my present life.
There had been occasions when she decided, or thought she had, that she ought to marry Lawrence. But it must be admitted that the more she was in the company of Reginald, the less disposed she was towards such an idea.
And yet, just now...
Just now, she'd told Reginald...
To punish him, I suppose.
She told him that Lawrence was a suitable companion.
Oh, Mary, you are such a wretched, stupid creature.
I take it, then, that the answer is yes. You'll go to Rufford Hall.
We will. Mama informs me that she's particularly anxious to renew the acquaintance of Lord Rufford's sister. So you see the matter settled.
And do you intend to ride the fellow's horse while you're there?
Most certainly. I never refuse a good offer. Can't a young lady borrow a gentleman's horse?
No lady of mine would do so, unless the gentleman was a very close friend.
But Mr. Morton, I'm not yet your lady, and therefore I shall ride Lord Rufford's horse. Perhaps you could indicate as much when you write your letter of reply.
John Morton was no fool. He strongly suspected that Lord Rufford's invitation had been prompted by his interest in Arabella, and that the latter's show of detachment masked a strong desire to renew her acquaintance with his lordship. But it must be said, Mr. Morton had derived scant pleasure from Arabella's stay at Bragton, and he was dolefully inclined to let events at Rufford Hall unfold, come what may, and to discover thereby if his suspicions were correct. There remained the matter of transport.
I suppose that Mama and I'd better go in the phaeton.
Ah, I thought that you and I might be together.
That would be very pleasant, it's true.
Then why can't it happen?
There are proprieties, Mr. Morton.
Proprieties? What if you and I were going on our own? Wouldn't we share a carriage?
Certainly not. If we were to be on our own, then I wouldn't go at all. You've been in the States too long. You've become accustomed to somewhat looser principles.
That's nonsense, Arabella, nonsense. But if you're so anxious about proprieties, we'll put Mr. Gotobed in the phaeton on his own, and your mother can chaperone us in the carriage.
Oh, yes. And you and she will quarrel all the time, as you always do.
The fact is, you're ashamed of me.
Don't be ridiculous.
You've only to say the word, and we can end the engagement straight away.
Is that what you want, Mr. Morton?
You know very well that it isn't. I'd be happy to marry you tomorrow.
If so, I wonder why you've created so many difficulties.
You're talking about the money, I suppose.
I assure you, Mr. Morton, I prefer not to talk about money at all, and I understand very little about it. But there are, I believe, such things as marriage settlements.
Indeed there are, in respect of which I have received some distinctly unreasonable requests on your behalf. And I don't intend to give in to them.
But on the question of who was to ride with whom, he did give in.
About that fella Gourley. Oh. What sort of position does he occupy in the neighborhood?
As far as I'm aware, he occupies no sort of position at all.
And yet he has land.
Around 50 acres.
Oh, I find it strange. He's a landowner, but he seems to be in the lowest depths of poverty and ignorance.
I suppose he mismanages his property. And he probably drinks.
In the States, you know.
Yes.
I doubt if you could find a fella as squalid and ignorant as Gourley. I guess he's disadvantaged by having a lord living so near him.
His lordship's proximity would have quite the opposite effect if Gourley tried to be amenable.
You mean if he was subservient, became Lord Rufford's vassal?
Mr. Gotobed, I rather think that you're only looking at part of the picture. Gourley's a rogue.
So everyone says.
Then why can't you believe them?
Yes, everyone's asking that as well. But I came to this country to discover the truth, not what people tell me is true. And even if Gourley is a rogue, whose fault is that?
Meanwhile, in a carriage some distance ahead...
I'm wondering, Mama, whether we might not have treated Mr. Morton rather badly.
I think we've treated him as well as he deserves. What a house to bring us to, and what a witch and a grandmother to inflict on us. And then there's the vulgar American, too.
Well, I'm not afraid of the grandmother. And the senator will be going back to Washington eventually.
And you, my dear, will very shortly be at Rufford Hall.
Yes.
You haven't given up on his lordship already?
No. But I fear that it will either be most troublesome or, more likely, will result in nothing at all. Lord Rufford, I suspect, is only amusing himself with his invitation.
Well, perhaps, my dear. But if he were to let his guard down and say the word, or something like it at least, we wouldn't allow him to take it back. We'd inform the Duke.
The Duke? What would Lord Rufford care about the Duke?
This Duke, I should inform you, is the Duke of Mayfair. I'll not venture to comment on what Lord Rufford's estimation of the Duke might be. It's enough for you to know that Lady Augustus has a husband, Lord Augustus, who isn't much of a husband. The two never live together now. And that the Duke of Mayfair is Lord Augustus's brother.
The fact is, Mama, that unless I'm clever, I could fall between two stools. I could founder with his lordship and fail with Mr. Morton too by dint of trying with Rufford. And then, oh, Mama, I should have to begin all over again, or else give up entirely.
There was silence while Arabella weighed up her situation. She knew, of course, that she didn't like Bragton Park, and she didn't much like John Morton now that he'd taken up residence there. Back in England, he seemed to Arabella to have diminished in importance. The truth is, now that he was captured, now that he was no longer the object of Arabella's predatory instinct, John Morton, like any man, was bound to appear less interesting. And he'd done himself no favours by being viewed in the barren wastes of his country home.
Of course, if he had a pot of money, it might help his cause a little. But Mr. Morton has made no such pot visible. Nevertheless,
Arabella was very tired of the strain and dust of battle. She was conscious, too, of her fading charms.
Lord Rufford would be a great prize. I must make the attempt. I'd be foolish not to. But this attempt shall be my last. If not Lord Rufford, then Mr. Morton.
Here we are, my dear.
Yes.
Charming, is it not?
Yes.
And very extensive, too, I think.
Yes. Very.
The Trefoils reached Rufford Hall some minutes in advance of Mr. Morton and the Senator, Arabella having given her driver firm instruction not to wait for the other vehicle. As a result, and as Arabella had calculated, she was able to make her entrance unencumbered by the two gentlemen, and with much better effect.
Tell me, Miss Trefoil, what have you done with your senator?
He's on the road somewhere, examining English institutions. But he'll arrive before midnight, I'm sure.
And you've heard about Mr. Gawley, have you?
Oh, yes. We've heard far too much about Mr. Gawley.
The senator thought he shouldn't be visiting here as a guest without first informing me that he'd got involved in the matter. I rather like him for that. He has pluck. You met him in Washington, I suppose.
That's right.
In fact, that was where our little group at Bragton first got together. It was decided between us that we should reconvene in England.
These remarks were phrased in order to account for Arabella's presence in Bragton without referring to John Morton and the engagement. Indeed, though the senator's non-appearance had been discussed, not a word had yet been said of Mr. Morton. He was merely a peg on which the invitation to the Trefoils had been hung, and the tacit assumption had been made that he should be treated as such. Arabella looked around the room, gazed at the drapes.
So much superior to the dingy curtains at Bragton.
She looked into the mirrors and at the lights and the paintings and the decor.
This is where I should be.
The air of wealth and idleness floated about her.
This is what I've worked so hard for.
She knew that she was undertaking a dangerous scheme. But everything seemed to smile on her and work upon her imagination, so that before the tardy wheels that were bringing Messrs. Morton and Gotobed had stopped at the front door, she'd almost convinced herself that she was destined to become Lady Rufford. And when the two gentlemen did arrive, she hardly spoke to them, and Lady Augustus didn't speak to them at all. John Morton fell into desultory discourse with one or two other guests, while those with Lord Rufford found that the conversation turned, inevitably, to the topic of horses.
I've been wondering, Miss Trefoil, whether you should ride Jemima or Jack. Jemima doesn't much like carrying men, it's true, but she's never been tried with a lady.
Then she mustn't be tried with Arabella. My dear, you mustn't even think of such a thing.
Mama, I'm sure it isn't Lord Rufford's intention to have me killed. Still, you'd better tell me, please, about Jack.
Scrambles over everything. Never falls.
But of course I'd get no plaudits for riding him.
None at all. On Jemima, the glory would endure till your dying day.
Yes, which might be considerably sooner than I'd hoped for.
The matter was still unsettled when Mr. Gotobed joined the debate and offered his own equestrian observations.
An Englishman, in my view, has no knowledge of how to ride.
Is that so?
Mm-hmm. To learn properly, He'd have to be on a pacing horse in California or Mexico. 80 miles a day with a heavy rider. Now, that's nothing for a pacing horse. But by the way, Lord Rufford, your sister has already pardoned me for interfering in the Gorley affair.
I was sure she would.
Yes, she sees you as a foreigner who knows no better.
A foreigner? Hardly. Americans are two-thirds English. But the remaining third, we think, is a considerable improvement.
John Morton all this while was offering smiles, nods, and politenesses towards the dull guests he'd been marooned with. But his ear was intent on the nearby tone of Arabella's voice. At Bragton, it seemed to him, she'd never once spoken as if anything interested her in the slightest. But here, in the company of the pleasure-loving aristocrat, she'd become alive. John Morton was angry with her. Angry with Lord Rufford, angry and ashamed. He wanted to protest. He wanted to shout out, "That lady there is engaged to me." He went to bed early. The Trefoils retired a little later.
I wish I could break my arm tomorrow.
Break your arm?
Or my leg. The leg would be better. I could be laid up here for weeks on end. Perhaps I should ride Jemima. Or, if I choose Jack, I could chuck myself off as we went over a gate. What do you think, Mama?
You've seen who's on Jemima, have you?
Yes, Major Caneback. You know, I might have managed her as well as the Major's doing. Yeah,
much better, I'm sure. Though, you and Jack do look very happy together.
We're already the best of friends. Ah, Mr. Morton.
None other.
You found yourself a horse, I see.
He had, but he'd found no proper clothes to go with it. The morning coat and the long, heavy trousers weighed him down and embarrassed him, and he knew in his heart that, dressed in this fashion and perched so awkwardly on his mount, he was nothing in Arabella's eyes. She, of course, was resplendent, and John Morton had to admit to himself, though not to Arabella, that hunting attire became her wonderfully.
Nice morning.
Are you happy with your beast, Mr. Morton?
It'll do. I only intend to go a little way.
Oh, as you prefer. What about you, Miss Trefoil? Are you keen on the chase?
Most certainly.
Good. I like a girl who rides to hounds.
Arabella made a firm resolution that, come what may, she'd be there at the kill.
If you give me a lead, Lord Rufford, I'll follow.
To which request, Lord Rufford assented. It would have seemed churlish to refuse. They rode through the park, and great interest was aroused by Jemima's frantic efforts to get rid of Major Caneback. The Major, indeed, was urged to abandon her, but he wasn't one to give in easily, and he declared that she needed a bit of discipline. That was all.
This way! Through the gate!
John Morton, not wishing to seem intimidated by his rival or by the speed of the ride, had kept up with Lord Rufford and Arabella. But in time, discretion won. Arabella, John Morton decided, must be left to her fate.
I think I'll, you go ahead.
Happy?
Oh, yes.
From the third field, it's fair riding. You can let him run. He'll be fine.
Arabella's heart was in her mouth, but she was quite determined not to be left behind. Unless, of course, Lord Rufford was left behind with her. She glanced over her shoulder, saw Mr. Morton's retreating figure, and smiled.
What do you think? Nice little horse, eh?
He's an absolute delight.
If I should ever get married, Jack will be the first present I bestow.
She'll be a lucky woman, my lord.
They rode on, and with Jack's help, Arabella managed marvelously. And though she knew so little about it all, she managed to keep on her horse and keep up with Lord Rufford. And quite close to them now, remarkably, was Major Caneback, a brief account of whose adventures on and off Jemima was relayed to Lord Rufford.
He's had a fall, has he?
He's had three or four, Adamson says. Shoulder badly hurt. That's the worst of the Major. He never knows when to stop. Now, go a little to the left. There's a ditch and a fence. Worried at all?
Not a bit.
Good. Give him his head. He'll do it.
But by this time, Major Caneback had come rushing up alongside, his features distorted by the anger he felt towards his recalcitrant steed. His hat was crushed, and his left hand was barely able to grip the reins. Mud covered him, and the horse was coated with foam, and her sides had been sliced by the Major's spurs.
Major!
Yes, Lord Rufford!
The Major was to the right, Lord Rufford to the left, and Arabella was between them.
Take care, Major!
Right out!
Take care! We need room!
The Major's horse went first. She rushed at the fence, went headlong into the ditch, and lunged out at the Major as he tried to rise. He lurched back towards the feet of Arabella's horse. Arabella half fainted and fell.
Miss Trefoil! Miss Trefoil!
I'm not hurt.
Are you sure?
Quite sure. Don't worry about me, Lord Rufford. If you can help the Major.
Miller's with him and Cummings.
Let me see if I can get up.
Careful.
Lord Rufford put his hand round her waist to support her, and she leant against him with luxurious abandon.
Oh, Lord Rufford, I heard the hooves hitting the poor man's head.
Try not to think about it. Be brave.
She was, we must suppose, very sorry for Major Caneback. But she reasoned it was somehow ordained that sooner or later he should fall from a horse and have his head split in two. How great a blessing it was, therefore, that she and Lord Rufford were there at that very moment so that she too could fall and be rescued by his lordship.
I heard the Major was carried straight to his room.
Yes, I think he was.
I heard he'll never ride again.
I wouldn't be surprised. Mama, I'm wondering what to do. If I take to my bed, a great deal of interest will be aroused as to my condition, and Lord Rufford will send up flowers and a note or a letter, and you and I could prolong our stay here.
But on the other hand, while you were in bed...
I'd be somewhat hors de combat, yes.
You'd miss the ball.
Yes.
You'd lose more than you'd gain. Time's precious, my dear.
My dear Miss Trefoil, how good to see you. I'm so glad to find you up and about.
I confess that I'm not quite on top form.
But you're being brave as ever.
I hope so. Oh, Lord Rufford, I do believe that the memory of it all will haunt me for as long as I live.
Arabella felt, perhaps Lord Rufford felt too, that her presence at the accident gave her the right to hold a private, one might say intimate, dialogue with his lordship. She was using the situation to her greatest advantage, as others in the drawing room, Mr. Morton among them, could clearly see. And since the ball would offer a further opportunity to develop an affectionate connection with Lord Rufford, Arabella was anxious to argue against cancelling the event.
I've just seen the Major, by the way. He's recovered his senses, such as they were. The ball tonight...
Yes?
I'm doing my best for the Major. I've telegraphed for a surgeon from London, a top man, I'm told. But it's still awkward. A dying man in his bedroom while the dancing goes on below it.
He might not be dying.
He might be dead. We'd have to cancel then, surely.
I don't quite see why. If no one was told that he died, the guests would be none the wiser. Still, if you've requested the surgeon, there must be reason for hope. And if there's reason for hope, there's no need to cancel the ball. Did you ask for the Major's opinion on the matter?
I did. He says carry on regardless.
There you are.
Yes.
A Major Caneback's happy, and no one's disappointed.
At Dillsborough, meanwhile, there had been sorrow and discord concerning Mary's possible stay with Lady Ushant. Mrs. Masters, Mary's stepmother, was bitterly opposed to the notion, and regarded any continued connection with her ladyship, Ushanting, she called it, to be foolish and inappropriate. Hunting after gentlefolks was not to be encouraged, particularly as Mrs. Masters considered solid, dependable Lawrence Twentyman to be the perfect match for Mary. But Mary's father bravely insisted that Mary must be permitted the journey to Cheltenham, a verdict which prompted Mr. Twentyman to seek a meeting with Mary before she left.
I hope you'll enjoy your visit.
Thank you.
It'll be a great shame not seeing you at Christmas. Absence, they say, makes the heart grow fonder, but I can't be more loving than I am. I'm devoted to you, and I will always be true to you. And, Mary, I want you to be my wife. Well, don't I deserve some answer?
You do. You deserve so much, more than I can offer. You deserve a girl who can be as true to you as you'd be to her. A girl who loves you.
Well, you don't hate me, at any rate.
Oh, of course I don't. I like you as much as any friend can like another.
Then I must be content with that. I'll take the chance. I will be so kind to you, dearest Mary, that before you know it, I'll have made you love me. Say you'll be my wife. Please, Mary, say the word.
I need time to think about it.
Mary.
Give me 6 months.
6 months? 6 weeks?
It's such a serious step.
Of course it is. I'm serious, am I not? 6 weeks.
No.
2 months, then. 2 months, and you'll give me your answer.
2 months. It seemed to Mrs. Masters, when Lawrence conveyed the news to her, that the matter was as good as settled. Everybody knows that when a girl expresses doubt, she'll always yield in the end. The two-month postponement was merely Mary's way of getting down from her lofty perch without suffering a sudden fall. Mary sat alone in the drawing room. 2 months, 6 months. It would make no difference to how she felt.
Seems hardly credible. It was only yesterday evening that I came to Rufford Hall. So much has happened.
There's been a great misfortune.
There has. And if it wasn't for that, how very, very pleasant my visit would have been.
Guests came to the ball, of course, but not in such numbers as had been expected. And those who were there danced in a solemn, business-like way, as if they were sacrificing themselves in the performance of a duty. A cadaverous pall seemed to hang over the proceedings.
We had a nice run, did we not? Little Jack carried you charmingly. I'd like to see you ride him again.
No.
No?
It won't be possible, I'm afraid. Mama and I must leave tomorrow. We must stay in a dull house. And then go on to other dull houses.
I don't know why you shouldn't come back here, though. When this somber mood has lifted.
No, Lord Rufford. Don't talk about it.
Why ever not?
Such happiness would be too perfect. I daren't even dream of it.
Lord Rufford, we may say with some certainty, was much attracted towards Arabella Trefoil. She might not be the most beautiful creature he'd ever met, but she was certainly his sort of girl. Arabella had made sure of that. Just as she'd adapted herself to Mr. Morton at Washington, she knew what she was about.
I suppose there's no hope for the Major.
I fear there isn't.
Perhaps while I'm with the Pilkingtons, you could send me a line if you have some news.
Oh, certainly. You're not returning to Bragton, then?
Heavens, no.
Was Bragton a dull place to stay?
Frightfully.
You know what they're saying, do you? About you and Mr. Morton?
Yes. Oh, dear. One gets married off to pretty well everybody these days, don't you find?
I certainly do. They'll be marrying you and me if we don't watch our step.
Lord Rufford, no. You hardly deserve a fate such as that.
So, you and Mr. Morton, there's no truth in it?
None at all. Mama and I were in Washington. We met the Senator, we met Mr. Morton, and Mama promised that when we got back to England, we'd go to Bragton. That's all. But I don't know why you should be asking about such a personal matter.
Well, a fellow likes to be sure how the land lies.
What do you mean?
Mr. Morton over there, he looks a little cross, that's all.
Mr. Morton had been observing Arabella and Lord Rufford. He'd also been conversing with Lord Rufford's sister and had employed all his diplomatic proficiency to suggest a denial of his engagement to Arabella. A week ago, he might have confessed all. But his doubts about Arabella were now confirmed, and he felt more inclined to revoke the engagement than admit to it. When Arabella was alone, Lord Rufford having declared that he ought not to monopolize her, Mr. Morton spoke with her in the drawing room.
Arabella, I'm not happy.
I'm sorry to hear it.
Your conduct is the reason. Your conduct here and at Bragton.
I see.
And since I've no wish to cause distress to you or to myself, I suggest that you either modify your behaviour or else regard our engagement as ended.
What am I to tell you?
You should tell me what you feel.
What I feel is that I can't, as you put it, modify my behaviour.
Then you wish to end the engagement.
I didn't say that. But you can back out of it straight away if you think that you've been injured.
You surely don't expect me to have enjoyed what I've witnessed here.
If you're jealous, Mr. Morton, I can't help that. I'm a single woman. And while I remain so, I'll behave as I please.
Soon after 2 o'clock, the guests had almost all departed. But Arabella hadn't yet retired for the night. In a small chamber next to the ballroom, she and Lord Rufford stood together. He'd taken her hand in his, and she'd not attempted to withdraw it.
Good night, Arabella.
Good night, Lord Rufford. Good night.
He kissed her once more. And as he did so, Arabella congratulated herself on the progress that had been made in a very short time. But much, she knew, remained to be done. Much artifice and endeavour would need to be employed before Lord Rufford and Rufford Hall could be hers.
In episode 1 of The American Senator by Anthony Trollope and dramatised by Martin Wade, Trollope was played by Robert Glenister, Arabella by Anna Maxwell Martin, Lady Augustus by Barbara Flynn. John Morton, Blake Ritson, Reginald Morton, Daniel Rabin, Mary, Penelope Rawlins. Mrs. Morton was played by Richenda Carey, Senator Gotobed by Stuart Milligan, Lord Rufford, Henry DeVas, Lawrence Twentyman, Carl Prekop, and Bearside, Sean Baker. The director is Tracy Neal.
And you can hear the next episode of The American Senator at the same time next week.
Calling all steel bands, calling all mass bands, carnival is going to happen.
We were the first organized band on the street in costumes.
The first carnival that we play, and we were out there with Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Kwame Kwe Amar tells the story of the Notting Hill Carnival, the biggest multicultural festival in Europe.
Caribbeans celebrated with joy and with laughter and with jumping and dancing.
It's all about perpetuating the culture. It's all about relieving stress on the day.
Stories from Notting Hill on BBC Radio 4.
Carnival's going to happen, you know.
Tomorrow afternoon at 4:15.